Welcome to The Sunshine Economy, building more with less labor. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening to WLRN. Construction cranes may dot the South Florida skyline. Construction zones may occupy our streets. Cement trucks and tractor trailers carrying bulldozers may mingle with our traffic. But there are fewer people working in construction in South Florida than there was a decade ago, just as the real estate boom came crashing down. This building boom this time does not have the unbridled activity like the last one, and it doesn't have the workforce either. 16% fewer people are working in construction today compared to the beginning of 2006, even though construction pay, on average, has jumped 15%. Now, those are the data points. These are the construction bosses dealing with plenty of work, but not plenty of workers.
It's rough. It's very difficult.
It's tight right now in this market.
Pretty much we're in dire straits.
Going back to the men and women that do the nuts and bolts of it, the hammer and nails, I think there's a high demand, and I think the labor force is actually strained due to the amount of construction going on.
That last voice is Alex Smith. He's a project manager for Moss & Associates.
That labor force that's out there, I think it's spread pretty thin.
We will walk a construction site with Alex and his boss, hearing about dealing with the tight labor market for construction workers later on in the program. Now, this isn't just a South Florida challenge, though. Statewide, 500,000 people work in construction today. 1 out of 4 of those jobs, though, are in 3 counties, Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade.
If I was primarily a South Florida company, it would be very difficult to grow the way we like to grow. If we grew at all, it'd be small percentages.
That's Russell Nash. He runs his family's mechanical contracting company, William R. Nash. Most of its business may be here, but he also has offices in South Carolina and the Caribbean.
Try finding people to do carpentry and concrete. Try finding them. It's very hard. Drywall, anything, name it.
That's Patricia Bonilla. She owns Luna Construction based in Palmetto Bay. She and Nash's mechanical contractors find themselves in a perpetual state of hiring.
I have openings all the time, all levels, plumbers, pipe fitters, sheet metal workers. We have an open application process going because we always need new people and we're always trying to upgrade.
They are among the firms fighting for experienced construction managers and workers throughout South Florida and nationwide. Over the past 4 years, South Florida's construction industry is averaging about 20,000 new building permits for homes, condominiums, and apartments per year, almost 3 times the average during the previous 4 years. The demand for construction workers is nationwide, though, and there are lots of reasons. The housing collapse a decade ago scared off a lot of workers who found employment in other fields. The physical demands of the jobs is off-putting. Experienced workers are reaching retirement age. And the issue of immigration. About a quarter of construction workers in America are foreign-born, and that's higher in places like South Florida. This summer, the National Association of Home Builders figured there were 250,000 unfilled construction jobs across the nation. Job openings come as the demand for higher-skilled construction work has been growing. Alex Smith again, project manager for general contractor Moss & Associates.
The building designs have actually become more complex with the use of computer-aided design, Revit models, architect details, more demanding owners. They demand more of us as the contractor and in turn with the specialty contractor. So that labor force that's out there, I think, is spread pretty thin.
And that challenge is firsthand for Smith and his boss, Bob Moss, at a several-hundred-million-dollar project taking shape on the beach in Fort Lauderdale.
When it comes time to the craftsmen, the guys doing the concrete work, doing the drywall work, we're getting ready to substantially increase the drywall trades, which puts up the studs and the sheetrock. And I would say that will probably boost somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 to 75 men in the next 10 days because we have that much area open up for those guys to work.
So still to come, we walk the worksite with veteran South Florida builder Bob Moss.
In our business, we're in charge of schedule. The way you achieve schedule is by the specialty sub-trades having the right manpower and supervision level. That's everyday life for us, like breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, building more with less labor. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Bob Moss may arrive at a busy and noisy construction site in a spotless Italian sports car, but in its trunk are a pair of dusty, steady work boots. He slips out of his loafers and into the boots before he offers me one of the two hard hats also inside his trunk. Moss has been in the construction business for about half a century, building buildings across North America. For most of those years, he's been based in Broward County. He is chairman and CEO of the construction management company that bears his name, Moss & Associates. He started it in 2004, and today, it's a billion-dollar firm with offices in four states and work across the continent. We met at one of its local projects, the Auberge Beach Residence on the Fort Lauderdale Beach. Its two condominium towers are aimed at the luxury end of the housing market. It's not just a project, though, for Moss. He plans on moving into one of those condominiums on the eighth floor of one of the towers. That won't be, though, until next summer. 370 workers were on the site the day we visited, with months of work still left.
We're placing concrete. This is a 24-story building. That one is 18 stories. So the concrete majority is finished over there. Over here we're on 19, so we have four more floors plus a roof. So that will be finished right around the end of the year. So the concrete work is finished. Then after concrete, what you see is windows going in, and then handrails going in. And then if you go inside, you see drywall studs, electrical, mechanical, plumbing, all the things for air conditioning, plumbing to make the units habitable and effective.
The old Ireland Inn used to sit on this site. After more than 40 years, the hotel closed in 2007. In its place are these high-end condominiums. The towers have set records for real estate prices. This summer, a penthouse unit sold for $9.5 million, breaking the previous highest price for a Broward County condominium set a year earlier by another unit in the same project. But for now, those units are months away from being finished. And meeting that timeline depends upon a lot of factors, but most important is having the right types of construction workers at the site at the right time.
Last month, we were very emphatic with our glass guy to get the railing in and get all the glass in this building. So he's almost finished. You see, he's got two floors of railing, and he's got a railing crew working. I see one of his guys right now. So he's off the hot seat on glass on this building. However, he's on the hot seat big time, and we're asking for more and more people. Now, in a month's time, that building will be glazed in, and there will be an issue. Secondly, over here, we're pushing the drywall guy who put some metal studs in the sheetrock guy, big time. We're telling him we need 30 more people over here, and we're getting ready to have him man up to about 40 or 50 people in this building. So then if you come back in 3 months from now, you say, where's the labor demand? It'll be in the electrical, it'll be in the HVAC, it'll be in the plumbing, it'll be in the crews doing the punch out and the tile work and the painting work. So that the question changes quite often.
And you've got confidence the subs have the access to the labor in order to meet your demands.
We hope so, and if they don't, we help them.
That's a key relationship on big construction projects. The general contractor like Moss & Associates and the dozens of subcontractors responsible for all kinds of work at the Auberge, from building a new seawall stretching more than 400 feet to tiling the bathrooms of the 171 condominiums in the project's two towers. Tim Harris is the general superintendent for Moss at the construction site.
My responsibility is to create and maintain the schedule of the project. I'm responsible for putting all the work in place and quality and the safety of all the employees and all the workers out here.
No small feat here. We're talking about the demand for construction labor, skilled labor. What's this project's demand for that kind of worker?
It's got a big demand for it because it's a high quality job. And to meet our standards, we've had to increase our supervision to help the subcontractors to be able to bring it up to our level of quality.
In our business, we're in charge of schedule.
Again, Bob Moss.
The way you achieve schedule is by the specialty sub-trades having the right manpower and supervision level. A day, every Monday, we meet in our office, every officer of the company, from 7 to 9. The discussion, 30 to 50% of that time, is how are we doing on schedule, which subcontractors need more people, where are they with getting those people, and what can we do to help them. So that's everyday life for us, like breakfast, lunch, or dinner. We we will never get away from that as long as we're in the construction business. We will always be pushing to beat or achieve a schedule and to achieve the right manpower, because we know that's the ingredient for successful execution of projects.
Among those in the regular Monday morning meetings is Alex Smith. He's a vice president and project manager at Moss.
Alex, what was that conversation like this past week on that Monday morning meeting when it came to this project and the demand for labor?
It was, it wasn't so much a point of demand for labor. It was a point of where are we at? Where can we get ahead? If we have areas available for work, then let's use our relationships that we have with those subcontractors and ask them, hey, can you get us that extra crew? Can you take that extra step? Can you work that extra hour? And by having those relationships with those subcontractors, they're willing to help us and get us the manpower that we need.
There was work going on all around us as we made our way through what will eventually be a pool deck with cabanas, palm trees, and deck chairs looking out onto the beach and the ocean. Under us is a 3-acre basement that will be for parking. But right now, construction trailers occupy the space separating the buildings from the beach. We climb up some metal stairs to a small stoop, maybe 30 feet in the air, overlooking the beach on one side and on the other, the $550 million condominium construction project.
What you see happening right now is what's called a flying form table, which is used to place the rebar and the concrete to create the various floors. It's a fast, economical way to do it. It requires big cranes. It requires people who know how to design those systems so that they're efficient and effective. And so you're now seeing one of those flown from one floor to the next. Big, dangerous work.
The flying table forms a big structure. A construction crane is swinging it out from one floor, lifting it, and inserting it into an upper floor. It's precision work, but on a big scale, requiring training, experience, and timing, the same skills necessary for managing a building project like this in a job market with fewer construction workers available than a decade ago.
It is a bit of a hard market with all the construction in South Florida these days and even across Florida throughout the country. And the hurricane certainly did put a damper on that. I think we've had some communications before where we've had some talks about maybe 30,000 members of the labor force, and I mean the labor force, the guys that are hammering and nailing, have gone from the market. They've left the market for another job that pays $5 an hour more or something, or gone to Puerto Rico and help down there. So that's been difficult.
Moss & Associates project manager Alex Smith at the Auberge Fort Lauderdale construction site. Still to come, how a small construction contractor is facing the competition for workers.
This is an area that, to me, has more priority than how much money I have in the bank. That simple.
This is the Sunshine Economy, building more with less labor. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening today. Patricia Bonilla started her company in a garage. She was a single mom with 3 kids, and she says she prayed for years to have her own company. Back then, she led the construction division of the city of Fort Lauderdale, and she went out on her own in 2007, just as the real estate market was collapsing.
Starting a company and the recession, it was like a leap of faith, really testing my faith.
And 10 years later, she expects her company, Lunacon Construction Group, to do $17 million worth of business this year. Her goal is $100 million in sales in the next decade. But she knows the growth will depend on finding and keeping the right employees, from construction managers to carpenters.
Ever since the economy turned around, for us, that has been the biggest challenge. Because what happens is, we know everyone is facing the same problem. What happens to us is that being small and having less project, smaller jobs, we're competing with the same salaries a large company is. So, and granted, we have come to the realization that, when you settle for a person, a less qualified person, we're still paying the consequences, and they are harsh to swallow. They're really tough to swallow. So settling for less, I guess, but you're still paying more than what you should pay, it's been very, very painful. And actually, to that regard, we are focusing on our HR. Lately, we've made this the main focus of our company, because, and I'm telling you, I'm hiring people just to, it's focusing on the culture, because yes, we're small, and maybe salary-wise, I can't compete with a large company, but there's other things that we can offer that a large company cannot offer, and that's what we're trying to focus on.
Has the difficulty for you in finding labor, has that affected the growth and the kinds of projects that you've been able to do?
It does. It has affected us. It has affected the growth. It has affected mostly the growth of the margins.
You're paying more, so the profit becomes less.
Becomes less, and then you have people that are not necessarily what you would want to have sometimes, and or maybe turnover. People leave because they go to another company, and somebody else is offering more money, and people tend to be like that. There's the loyalty, it's not necessarily there. So they leave you with a project going on, and some people don't even give you notice. Some people just quit, and they don't even give you notice.
How has this affected you at the project level, working with clients, and in some cases, the federal government, who's a big client of yours?
Yes, it has affected, because, of course, the client, first of all, no contract allows for those kind of situations. So when a person leaves and they don't haven't left things properly organized, and you have a project that is ongoing and the project has a deadline, it affects you and the client is not happy. So in the end, you might not even get work from this client. So it's hard. It's very hard.
Have you changed recruiting? Have you changed retention programs and plans in order to address this?
Well, if you see all that there, that's our new recruiting plan. I understand human capital in a different way.
You just pointed to, what, a pile of 2, 4, 6 kind of piles of paper spread out on a desk outside your office here. That's your new retention and recruitment plan. It's that fresh.
Is that fresh? And the trainings also that we're putting in place, so that we are able to tell people that come on board, you know, onboarding, this is what we have here to offer you. This is our commitment to you, because our expectations are going to be also very clear, so people know what they abide to and what they're working for. And the same thing, we're going to be able to commit to them as to what's the career growth that they're going to have here.
For the documents that you have laid out on this desk outside your office, how is that plan different than what you had in place over the past first decade of this company?
Totally. Totally different. I have to be honest and tell you that as a small company, we started in the garage. So the focus was not that. I have to admit that. And it has really, you know, I actually feel bad for the people that were very good that left the company, because I find that I failed them in some way. And that's something I'm just becoming aware of. You know, a lot of times when you have a small company, you don't really have anybody coaching you. You're coaching people and you're trying to figure all this out on your own. But when you start, and I started in the recession, everything is about the bottom line. Everything is about, you're guided by what the bank or your bonding company wants. And you know, you fail to see other things that none of those numbers take in consideration. And basically what we're doing is forcing ourselves to operate like if we were already a large company in that regard. Because I tell you, this is an area that to me has more priority than how much money I have in the bank. That simple.
It's that big of a priority right now. Your focus has shifted from the bottom line to employee retention, training, and culture.
And I want to be able to tell, just like clients are important for me, my employees become my clients too. And I'm of the philosophy of, you know, give as much love as I can, right? So it's, but the bread has to be in the pudding, right? You have to prove it. And this is where we have not, what we haven't done.
How much of this strategic change for you has been driven by just the lack of qualified applicants for jobs?
100%. Because the problem is that you were working so hard, and you almost say, for, you know, where is the fruit of the labor? Now I have a way of solving it. I'm pretty confident that what we're doing is going to help us. Does that mean that's going to resolve the shortage on labor? No.
Why do you think the labor hasn't come back into the market even as the work is there? Why isn't the supply keeping up with demand in this building boom, do you think?
How many parents do you think you have are out there that are going to tell their kids, be a plumber, be an electrician, or be an air conditioning mechanic? How many? You know, we don't understand. And I think it's I think the construction industry has not done a good job at advertising what a good living you can have being in this industry. I'm a woman, right? I am an engineer. I have a master in construction management. My own father, who was an engineer, fought me not to be an engineer, so you know. So I actually went against him. But, and to me, I'm in this industry through a career, through university. So that's kind of better. But he understood women. This is a very hard industry for women.
Why do you think he was discouraging?
He died when I was 19. So I don't think he was, it was more because he understood that this industry is tough for a woman, in the sense that it doesn't allow, you know, when you have kids and a family, there's no contract that has in it. You can take off if you're pregnant or if your child is sick, or there's no availability for any of those situations. So he discouraged, and it's a male-dominated field. I mean, face it. You go, when I meet somebody and I say I work for Lunacon, most likely they don't think I'm the president of the company. It's most likely it's the secretary or something like that. And it's fine. You know, I don't fight it. It is what it is. It's perception, and it exists.
Patricia Bonilla, president of Lunacon Construction. Now, the concern she voices about the construction business needing to work harder to attract new workers, men and women, is something echoed by a lot in the industry. And that's still to come as our program continues.
The skilled people are not there, so we have to grow our own.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. Thanks again for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson. Russell Nash is the second generation to head up his family's mechanical engineering firm, William R. Nash. The third generation is also involved in the company. When it opened back in the mid-1960s, Nash focused on plumbing and now installs all kinds of mechanical systems for hospitals, hotels, and airports throughout the southeastern U.S. and Caribbean. The company has over 300 employees, and CEO Russell Nash says his skilled labor is getting older. 30 years ago, the average age of his experienced plumbers, heating, air conditioning technicians, or welders would have been about 35. Now, he says the average is pushing 50. He says the lack of younger apprentices threatens future growth for him and the region.
Probably for the last 20, 25 years, a big push is that you need to go to college. And people are just, that's what they're doing. And they didn't see being a tradesman as a viable option for having that as a career. And that's just, it wasn't sold to them. It was sold that you need to go to college to become successful, which is not true.
And you think that the construction industry is kind of dealing with the results and the consequences of that?
Absolutely, there's no doubt. I mean, we live it every day. I mean, it's a challenge every day. We have to be very, very careful about what jobs we're taking, whether we can man these jobs, what geographical area they in. If it's out of our normal geographical area, we have to make sure that there's an available labor pool there. And this is just, it's not just South Florida. This is nationwide. It's a big, big deal.
What is it about South Florida, though, that has been unable to attract the jobs back here? Is the work just not here like it was 10, 12 years ago?
Oh, no. Quite the opposite. I mean, if I remember right, I was reading an article. This is the second busiest place in the world besides Qatar. There's a ton of work to be done here between, the residential and the in healthcare. I mean, it's a ton of work here. I mean, we do a lot of healthcare work, and there's more work than we can possibly even do.
So help us understand here, supply and demand being the law of economics in a market economy here. If you're talking about demand for construction labor is the strongest in South Florida that you've ever experienced and perhaps the strongest in this hemisphere, but yet the supply hasn't come down to fill those opportunities.
I just think that not just anybody, you can't just decide I'm going to be a construction worker and go and the next day and start doing that. There's a lot of things involved. I mean, it is a skilled occupation, and there's a lot of things that you just can't get up one morning and say, okay, I'm going to be a plumber today. You know, I'm going to be a pipe fitter. I'm going to be an electrician today. So a lot of things you need to learn. You need to learn the trade. You need to learn safety. I mean, safety is vital. I would say that the last couple of years we've had more issues in our company with safety and quality than we have in the first 48.
What's been driving that?
It's just you have people that are not used to being performing on a project site.
So it really is the skill level of the folks who are turning their wrenches, so to speak.
Yeah. It's been a real challenge for us. Now, we're combating that. We're providing more training now than we ever have in-house. The need now is just so great. I mean, we have to just keep turning our people training over and over and over again, more than we ever had to do.
So if you had to divert some of the profit margin on projects back into the company in a different way, not in personnel per se, but in training?
Oh, we have. I mean, this year, yeah, I bet we've spent four times the amount of money this year alone than we normally do. And we're spending it now hoping for it to pay dividends, you know, and for years to come. But that we just have to do that because, like I said, the skilled people are not there, so we have to grow our own.
So a four times increase on your in-house training budget, what's that look like on your annual budget?
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. Yeah, it is. It's a lot. We have 330 employees, I think, now. So and it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
When you're talking about spending of several hundred thousand dollars on training, has that impacted spending somewhere else within the company? In other words, have you had to peel back from investments elsewhere?
Not really. I mean, obviously, yes, it has in some, but not in the large way.
Yeah.
No, we just figured it's an investment. You know, just that at this time, considering the situation, it's just we have to make a bigger investment. That's all.
We've seen in Broward County the unemployment rate drop below 5%. We've seen a lot of public policy discussion around workforce investment and workforce training. You've seen a lot of economic development discussion around diversifying the South Florida economy away from traditionally lower paying hospitality jobs. What is your experience in all of that discussion? Because you're living it on the construction side, which is paying more mm-hmm. on a median level than the average wage in South Florida.
There's no doubt about that. But I don't think that's how it's viewed or how it's being portrayed, though. That's what I think is the biggest thing. I don't think that prospective employees or prospective people that come into our industry are aware of that. I don't think they know how well they can do in this industry. And that's the biggest thing I think we need to get out to everyone out there, specifically in the high schools, when they first start going to high school, is that what a viable option that is and as your vocation. I mean, you can make good money doing this work. And what it's even better than that, to me, there's nothing more fulfilling than going to work every day and you're starting on a piece of bare land. And then when you're done with that job, you're just watching this job grow and just becoming something. And to me, I don't know what would be more satisfying than that. I think that's very it's satisfying for me. And I'm not even doing the work. You know, I'm so proud when we're done with the work that we do and to see the work that we do. To me, that certainly beats the, and I'm not putting this down, but it certainly beats a 9-to-5 office job every day. You know, I'm in the office every day. I gotta, I need to get out because it drives me nuts. But just going to the job sites and watching a job go from nothing to this beautiful building, it's very satisfying. I think that we just got to get the word out to these people. Listen, this is a great way to make a living, and it's satisfying, and you'll be happy. You just need to give it a try.
Have you begun to have concerns about the longer-term growth of your company as it faces this supply shortage of skilled labor?
Yeah. I mean, if we don't do something as an industry, if we don't do something as a country, it's going to be a problem. I mean, there's no doubt. I'm concerned. Right now, we have to be very, very careful how much work we take on. There's a lot of work out there. I could get a lot more work than we currently have now, but we're not doing it because we can't man the jobs. And if I don't take on additional work, I can't grow my company. And we won't. I mean, we won't. I mean, if we have to take a step back, we'll take a step back.
Why does it suffer from that perception problem, do you think, in terms of workforce?
I just think it's just that the way how it's portrayed, you know, from the county level to the state level to the federal level. It's like option B, you know? It's a less non-satisfying choice you have to make. And that shouldn't be how it is. It should be plan A1 and plan A2. It shouldn't be a plan B. That's I just think it's just a perception.
How do you begin to try to bend that within your company?
Well, for current employees or for prospective employees?
Well, I suppose for prospective employees, because if you want the company to continue to grow, and I presume that you do, that depends on the viability of projects and the competition that you provide, but also the labor pool in which to complete those
right.
projects.
As I say, on the current employees, they know it. They're living it. My employees live it. I like to hope they think they're living it. They seem to be pretty happy. We got to get out there and get into the middle schools or the high schools when they start talking to these kids very, very early. Not like I said, not in their senior year, but in their freshman, sophomore year, and let them and throw it all out there so they can see it. And we need to do it as a group, not just Russell and Wayne Martin Ash Incorporated, but get some other contractors, like electrical contractors, sheet metal, mason workers, concrete companies or whatever. Let them know, listen, this is a viable option to have a very satisfying job that you can make good money at.
Russell Nash is CEO at William R. Nash Mechanical Contractors, speaking with us from his office in Miramar. Still to come, back at a job site where work and wages come together.
The fact is that they don't have enough labor in general to support the construction industry here to the pace that we were at. So wages have increased.
And the market's been able to sustain that?
No.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening to WLRN. The building boom that South Florida has been experiencing over the past 5 years has been concentrated on condo buildings, especially high-end buildings on or near the beach and downtowns. While the number of condominium sales continues dropping thanks to thousands of new construction units flooding the market, prices have continued climbing. Now, luxury projects have dominated the landscape during the cycle. Fueled by a combination of foreign money and low interest rates, these high-end projects began as the cycle was turning, and they're nearing completion as financing and buyers have gotten a little tougher to find. The U.S. dollar has strengthened against international currencies over the past several years, making Miami real estate more expensive for overseas buyers. That can make financiers more leery to loan money needed for construction. And some developers have been offering incentives for high-priced units, something that was unheard of when the luxury market was red hot. These types of buildings may have condominiums that are way outside the price range for most South Floridians, but they have helped raise average wages for construction workers. The demand to build these luxury buildings outstripped the supply of skilled labor. So to get an idea of the work necessary to meet this demand, I met Rick Kolb at one of these high-priced condominium developments that will be finished in the weeks ahead. Kolb is a senior vice president at Suffolk Construction, the general contractor of this project.
We're at Jade Signature in Sunny Isles Beach, Florida, which is a very complex condominium project being built for the developer Fortune International. And we're standing right now on the entry drive for the residents that come up as they come into the first and second level drop-offs.
What kind of work is happening today at the work site?
Well, today we're working on topping slabs on the entry ramp. We're waterproofing some secondary levels here on the north side of the building. We're pouring some topping slabs to get ready for some terrazzo work and some various finish work, punch work on the inside of the building.
Work here is beginning to wrap up, beginning to wind down. You've got a few hundred workers today. A lot of skilled workers here today, huh?
There's quite a few skilled trades workers here putting the final touches on the building. You know, everything from Stone Milano products, which you see going on right here. I know your listeners can't see that. As well as, marble, tile, stone finish guys, pool finish guys. We have a very unique topping slab that's got a stone aggregate in it that Herzog de Morien designed for the entry drive that you're standing on now.
That's the architect of this building
correct.
Here.
Yes. Yeah.
We're walking by workers now, kind of leveling out this slope circular driveway that'll bring up the residents and
the
visitors here.
Drop-off level.
Yeah.
The primary drop-off level on level two. So we're going to walk through here and I'll get you a look at the primary entry dome.
So now walking toward what'll be the lobby of this facility, and it's unfinished cement here. As we're moving in and around the scaffolding, ducking under some of these 2x4 planks. And you've got scaffolding stretching up here to the ceiling, doing that sanding finishing work here on the stucco ceiling.
Yeah, so this is the primary entry dome for the drop-off of the residents. And this is all poured concrete, so the complexity of getting this concrete right had to be modeled. And so we had to model all the formwork to get the exact lines that Herzog de Morien wanted for this dome. And the finish that you're seeing that's going on it now is it's not a stucco product, it's called Stone Milano. What's unique about it is you put a substrate of stucco on it, and then the Stone Milano comes on top. And from there, when it's done, you start sanding, believe it or not. So, I mean, you don't sand stucco. So it's a very high-end polished finish that pretty much encompasses this entire building from levels 4 all the way to 1.
So you're talking about extremely high skilled labor here.
Extremely, yes.
For a very fine, high end luxury product and build out. What's been the challenge with this project when it comes to finding, securing, and managing that kind of labor relation?
Primarily, the challenge is in general in the market. There is not as much labor in our market as there used to be in the last boom cycle that we had. One of the statistics I always kind of quote is we're operating on 40% less labor availability than we had in the last boom that we had. After that boom, most of those skilled workers left and went and did other things. And the sub-trade partners that are in our community have not grown their business as much as what they did in the last boom. So there's a limited pool of resources that you can pull from. So it's really about building relationships with those subs. And treating people well and having good, honest conversations with them about when their work is ready to be worked. It's about implementing our lean planning systems on making sure that they have a clear path of area to work so they can make production. And when you schedule that right and manage it right, the trade partners don't have a problem sending you their guys, because when they start to lose money is when their work takes longer and they have more labor invested in it.
How's that affected timelines on this construction cycle and budgets on this construction cycle?
I'd say more on the budget side. than the timeline side. It's, we had plenty of time to plan it. You know, we had a few hiccups with some storms, with the preparation of Hurricane Matthew and then the Hurricane Irma storm. But
it happens when you're conducting an interview at a construction site. A worker fires up a noisy power tool. You've got to keep moving if you want to keep talking.
So to finish the thought, Tom, the fact is that they don't have enough labor in general to support the construction industry here to the pace that we were at. And so wages have increased. And that has caused some price increases to go forward.
And the market's been able to sustain that?
No.
That begs explanation here, Rick, but we'll get beyond the power tools.
Right when we were talking about construction pay, Suffolk Construction is a big player in the industry. Forbes estimates it does around $3 billion in sales a year, building projects from Boston to Miami to San Diego. So when Senior Vice President Rick Kolb says the construction market is not sustaining the pay increases skilled labor has experienced, it's worth finding a quieter spot. So we walked around a corner and smack dab into the wind coming off the ocean. Eventually, we found our way to what will be a beach bar and grill.
So Tom, just to answer that a little bit better, and I know I said no, but with the amount of activity and the thirst for development, when you hit that breaking point of labor availability not being there, the prices really tend to go a lot up. And that's when those projects hit that intersection of it, the construction cost doesn't work and the developers perform anymore. And what you saw, obviously, like most of us saw here in Miami, is there's been some projects that have been put on hold or canceled. So
because the difficulty of getting the financing, they haven't been able to secure the loans.
That would be a big part of it, and then the rising cost. Now, luckily, we're in a little bit of a slowdown, so people can catch their breath. And I would anticipate, in the next 10 to 14 months, maybe we'll start to see a little bit more activity of things making a little bit more financial sense. You know, there's quite a bit of new product coming online that has to be absorbed, but you know, downtown Miami isn't where everything is developed either, right? We're a South Florida community where we work in Palm Beach County, Broward County, Miami-Dade County.
As you see maybe that little dip, that softness that we've been experiencing begin to lessen in the next year or so, are you anticipating the labor cost inflation that's happened to slow down to be able to make the numbers work better for some of these developers?
Yeah, we're anticipating some better pricing from the subs, and we think that'll both be driven by the need to get material out and sold, as well as the need to actually create new business for the sub where we can actually run a business with cash flow. So the profit expectations might not be as much, and there may be some labor adjustments in the market, but whatever they are, I'm sure they will be minimal in time before it starts to go again, and then there seems to be a scramble for getting labor.
There's little about this specific building that is cookie cutter at all. How difficult has it been as you've gone through the building cycle here and you've experienced throughout the entire life cycle of this project the labor shortage that the South Florida construction industry has been wrestling with now?
It's been somewhat difficult, but the fact that we had the opportunity to work with the owner a year in advance in planning the work and getting the right sub-trade partners on board, all the way down to those agreements that we have with those trade partners where we actually put the names of their key foreman in the contract that they have to supply.
That means that person's got to stick around with that company.
Yes, exactly right. And as long as you have good skilled supervision on a job with good skilled labor, you can actually get things done the way you want to do them.
Is that a different strategy you've used with this project or this cycle by putting specific people, specific supervisors for subcontractors inside their contracts?
I wouldn't call it different. We've used it before when we've done other projects where there's complex areas and components of work that need to be done. And it's almost like an interview process, much like we're interviewing with an owner on occasion. when we sit down and try to figure out who we're procuring to do the work, we will do a deep dive into the skilled availability of those people and bring them in for an interview. We'll talk to them about, do you work with us in lean planning? How do you like to schedule your work? What kind of quality control process do you have in place, et cetera? And so there's just a long, detailed list of things that we'll interview a subtrade partner for, not just on schedule and quality, but the people that are putting the work in place, including manpower counts and how many people you need in certain areas to complete the work timely.
Before we left, we made our way to the basement of the Jade Signature. Now sure, the fancy lobby, ground-level pool, and architectural flair of the building are nice, but for a contractor, this three-level below-ground parking garage built on the beach is its own specialty construction project. We were more than 40 feet below sea level into the water table, standing on the bottom level of the garage that will fit more than 400 cars.
How far and wide on a project like this do you have to pull in labor?
We have subs, like I said, from California, the southeastern United States, so we have some specialty subs from Canada. And then we get some materials from overseas, from Europe.
How much of that, Rick, has been driven by the lack of that talent here within South Florida, and how much of it is driven by the high-end luxury nature of the finishing touches here?
Well, when you're talking strictly for specialty needs, I'd say we're probably around 15% of that labor that provides those some of the high-end finishes that you've seen. But there is some local label here that can handle that, like the Venetian plaster and the level 5 finishes, etc. And then there's just the general normal construction activities that if you're afforded enough time and you can plan the project right and you work with the trade partners about the skilled supervisors and skilled craftsmen that you're getting and you name them in the contract, you can mitigate those circumstances. Especially for a project like this. As projects get more complex, it takes a lot more thinking on our side on how to execute the work. Because the reality is we're only as good as our trade partners, and we're only as good as the guy actually putting the work in place, right? And the preference is to do it right the first time, right? So it's all about getting the right people there.
Rick Kolb with Suffolk Construction, leading the work and the tour at the Jade Signature Condominium Building in Sunny Isles Beach. Pilar Ribe is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.